Explicit content is found in this episode, so listener discretion is advised. Hello, and welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. Thanksgiving is generally a time to celebrate and gather with your families. Yes, the mood can be tense depending on the topic of conversation, but everyone generally leaves in one piece. Tonight, you'll hear a story about two teenagers whose idea of fun would lead to their demise. Okay, on to the show. Thanksgiving Day, 2012, Little Falls, Minnesota. Byron Smith, a retired engineering officer with the U.S. State Department, was preparing for a much different gathering on this day. At 11:25 a.m., he moved his truck out of his driveway. This was not to make room for family members coming over to park for the day's festivities. This was to give the guys that no one was home. He made his way back up his driveway on foot just 20 minutes later and retreated to his basement. There, he would lay a tarp on the floor, place an audio recorder next to him, as he wedged his armchair in between two bookcases. He sat down to read his novel. A Ruger Mini 14, which is a lightweight 22 caliber semi-automatic rifle, was by his side. A revolver was holstered to his hip. Now that his trap was set, all he had to do was wait. Many people will question, what led Byron to this? He would state that over the course of the preceding months, his home had been robbed numerous times. These thieves didn't just take personal belongings, they took his sense of security. He was supposed to be safe in his home, but now he wasn't. He had to protect himself. He began carrying a weapon. Byron was going to fight back. He was not going to live in fear any longer. He was going to take control. An hour later, two teen cousins, 18-year-old Haley Kiefer and 17-year-old Nicholas Brady, are seen on surveillance video circling Byron's home. Nicholas is seen peering through the windows, ringing the doorbell, and jiggling various door handles. He's trying to see if anybody's home. He spots a camera and quickly conceals his face, then attempts to knock it down. Minutes later, Haley is seen circling the house with her pink purse in tow, looking for her cousin. They were there to commit a crime. That morning, they had robbed another home just down the street. They didn't take much, just some coins and prescription drugs. Nicholas had been stopped in his red Mitsubishi Eclipse since someone reported his vehicle as suspicious. He was released by the officer moments later. Were these just teenagers who were bored and looking to cause a little trouble? Or were they beginning to show signs of serious delinquency? One can only speculate. What is not disputed is what would happen next. Nicholas would circle back around to Byron's bedroom window, where he would break it in order to gain access into the home. Once inside, he rummaged around upstairs, but he opted to try his luck in the basement. Byron heard the window shatter. He readied himself to face the intruders. This was his moment to end the fear that had plagued him. Nicholas opens the door to the basement and begins a descent down the stairs where his life will end. He didn't know that before he could see Byron, Byron could see him. He has his rifle cocked for the moment Nicholas's torso comes into sight. He shoots. Nicholas is heard groaning as he falls down the stairs where he is shot again. He raises his hand in defense, but Byron shoots a final fatal shot. It hits him directly in the face. He drags Nicholas's body to the tarp and moves him into his workshop. 10 minutes later, Haley enters the home. She is searching for Nicholas. She decides to head to the basement. She too is unaware of the painful death that awaits her. She opens the basement door, whispers, "Nick," walks down the steps, and then a shot rings out, and she is struck in the hip. Byron fires another shot at Haley. She screams out, "Oh my God." Haley tumbles down the stairs, and Byron is heard apologizing. He's not apologizing to Haley. He's apologizing that his gun jammed when he attempted to shoot her again. He drags her to the tarp where her dead cousin is. He pulls his revolver out and fires at her 5 more times while saying, "You're dying," and calling her a bitch twice before doing what he calls a finishing shot. He placed the revolver under her chin and pulled the trigger. I will now play the audio that was captured during the shootings. Please be advised, this is not for the faint of heart.
Oh, sorry about that.
Oh my God. Oh, my
God. You're dying. Bitch.
I'm safe now.
He was relieved. The fear he felt over the past few months was now gone. He could relax. For the next 5 hours after the shootings, he stayed in his house. The audio recorder captured him talking to himself. Here are some examples of what was captured.
I feel a little bit safer. Not totally safe. I'm still shaking a bit, but a little bit safer. I left my house at 11:30. They were both dead by one. I refuse to live in fear. I felt like I was cleaning up a mess. Worse than spilled food. Worse than vomit. Worse than shit.
Police officers arrived to the scene, and Byron told them what happened. He said that after he shot them, he dragged their bodies into his basement workshop and left them there. Responding officers asked Byron to show them the location of the bodies, after which he led them to the bodies of Haley and Nicholas. He was arrested and transported to the Morrison County Sheriff's Office for further questioning. There is no audio available for the interrogation, so I will read from the court complaint. Smith told officers how he shot a man coming down the steps. He explained that he wanted the person dead and shot him until he was dead before dragging him onto the tarp. He described how he shot a woman coming down the steps. He said that he shot the woman again after she fell to the bottom of the steps, this time aiming for her heart. He told officers that after he dragged the woman into the workroom, he noticed she was still gasping for breath, so he shot her. He explained that he thought the woman was his neighbor. For the past month, he had felt very threatened, and when he heard people coming down the stairs of the basement, he believed that they were the burglars who stole his guns. He added, "I figured they're willing to use guns if they steal guns, and I decided that I've got a choice of either shooting or being shot at." He described how he killed Brady as he came down the stairs. "I saw his feet, and then I saw his legs, and when I saw his hips, I shot." When the investigator asked whether he saw Brady's hands when Brady came down the steps, Smith added, "I didn't see his hands at that point." He explained how Brady tumbled to the floor, and he's looking face up at me, and I shoot him in the face. I wanted him dead. After he shot Brady, Smith sat back down in the chair, and his adrenaline was going. "I just wanted to calm down more than anything else." He also described how he shot Kiefer in the hip as she was coming down the stairs. Again, Smith shot her before he saw her hands, and when she fell on the ground, her hands were open, but she would have dropped anything she was carrying. But he was not going to ask if there is a gun. You know, people who steal guns, I don't want to give them the chance to shoot me. She could have or might not have had a gun in her hands. Smith also elaborated on why he killed the woman he thought was his neighbor. And thinking back on it, what happened was, everybody has red buttons, everybody has sore spots, and I've known since grade school that being ganged up on is a sore spot with me. I just wasn't thinking. I wasn't thinking. I was just, they're ganging up on me, so I killed her too. Smith thought that Kiefer laughed at him when his rifle jammed. It wasn't a very long laugh, because she was already hurting. There was another red button, I guess, most people would have, so if you're trying to shoot somebody and they laugh at you, you go again. I fired more shots than I needed to. When asked, "Why did you fire more shots than you needed to, do you figure?" he replied, "A 22 is a pea shooter, and I was very, very threatened, unhappy. You were mad, correct?" "Yes." Smith described how he dragged Kiefer to the tarp and explained, after she was on the tarp, she was still gasping, and as much as I hate someone, I don't believe they deserve pain, so I gave her a shot under the chin, up into the cranium. I thought she was dead, and it turned out she wasn't, so, I did a good clean finishing shot, and, she gave out the death twitch, first time I've ever seen it in a human, but it works the same in a beaver and a deer and whatever." Smith explained how he checked Kiefer's shoes to see if the tread pattern matched the shoe print left on the basement door from the October 27th burglary. When he determined Kiefer's shoes did not match, he checked Brady's shoes. Smith thought Brady's tread pattern might match and that law enforcement would need to investigate further. Toward the end of the interrogation, Smith recounted the previous burglaries at his home. He explained that even after he started locking his doors, the dogs had eaten well enough at the garbage pail. They kept returning. Smith also said that he now realized that parking far away was likely the impetus for the burglars to come, because they thought I was gone. I never parked that car in that location before. It's interesting that Byron attempted to justify his overkill actions by complaining about Haley laughing. In the audio, I could not hear any laughing, not even for a moment. What I could hear was a young lady asking, "What is happening?" and then being told, almost taunted, that she's going to die. He seemed to take great pride in his finishing shot. He had no remorse for securing his safety. He was defending his home. He was asked why there was a delay in him contacting the authorities. He stated, "I did not want to ruin the Thanksgiving holiday for law enforcement." The sheriff's department disagreed with Byron's reasons for the murder and believed that there was enough cause to charge him with 2 counts of second-degree murder. A grand jury agreed, and on April 21st, 2014, his trial began. The defense would argue that Byron was simply defending himself. He lived alone and had been the victim of previous break-ins. It was expected that they would use Minnesota's Castle Doctrine to defend his actions. A Castle Doctrine is a legal doctrine that designates a person's abode or any legally occupied place as a place in which that person has protections and immunities, permitting him or her, in certain circumstances, to use force, up to and including deadly force, to defend himself or herself against an intruder, free from legal persecution, for the consequences of the force used. However, Sheriff Michael Wetzel would vigorously disagree with this defense tactic, telling the Union Times, "Minnesota law clearly states that you have the right to use force to protect your property. The force must be reasonable. The law further states you have the right to use deadly force if necessary to protect yourself from great bodily harm or the commission of a felony in your home. We understand that. The law doesn't permit you to execute somebody once the threat is gone, and there is no possible way the crime can continue. The law also requires that law enforcement be notified and that the aid be rendered. We received no such calls. We got the information from the neighbors." Prosecutor Brent Wartner, during his opening statements, portrayed Byron as a vigilante who sat waiting in his basement in the chair tucked between two bookcases with two loaded weapons, water, and food. He highlighted that Byron had an audio recorder running for 6 hours before, during, and after the shootings. The prosecutor further claimed that he was waiting before calling anyone because he wanted to be ready for when he thought the neighbor girl's father would come looking for her. Byron's attorney said that Byron shooting Haley and Nicholas was not in dispute, but that he is not guilty of murder for doing it. He outlined Byron's life history, including his years in the military, his work with scouts, and later his employment with the U.S. State Department. This case is a tragedy. Make no mistake about it. There are two people who are dead, and I will not attempt to de-emphasize or downplay that reality. Mr. Smith is the person who shot and killed those two people, but he is not criminally responsible for their deaths. A jury of his peers disagreed, and on April 29th, 2014, Byron David Smith was found guilty on 2 counts of first-degree murder with premeditation and on 2 counts of second-degree murder. The jury deliberated for 3 hours. He was immediately sentenced to life in prison without parole. The residents of Little Falls were torn. Some applauded Byron for his actions, stating that the teens would never have died if they had not gone to his home to commit a crime. Others sympathized with the teens, knew they were in the wrong for breaking into Byron's home, but they didn't deserve to die the way they did. Byron was in overkill mode, and instead, he should have just called the cops and let the courts handle it. But as you heard earlier, by Byron's own statements, he didn't believe that this was going to be the best course of action. Even if they were arrested, they would just get a slap on the wrist, and maybe they would come back. So he would have to continue living in fear. He appealed his sentence immediately, but in May of 2016, his sentence was affirmed and his appeal was denied. Byron is serving out his 2 consecutive life sentences at the Minnesota Correctional Facility in Oak Park Heights. I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. If you did, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. It would really help us out. You can find us on most social media platforms, Twitter at TCFCpod, Facebook.com/TCFCpodcast, and of course, our website is truecrimefanclub.com. If you have an episode request or general suggestion, you can send us an email, TCFCpod@gmail.com. While you're waiting for episode 4, here are some other great true crime podcasts you can listen to. Curiosity Kills. Hosts Lindsay and Haley take you along as they discuss, in their signature dry and sarcastic humor, various true crime topics, not for the weak at heart or humorless. And Already Gone Podcast, sharing stories of the missing, the lost, the mysterious, and the murdered. In the spirit of the Thanksgiving holiday, I wanted to express some gratitude to my Twitter followers. You all have been so amazingly supportive of the podcast. It's truly an honor to be a part of the true crime community. I wish I could thank all of you in person for tweeting at me or retweeting the content that I put out, but I'm just going to do some quick shout outs. I know I won't be able to get everybody. So here it goes. Maria, DeSativa, Melly, Becky, Jess, Justin, Esther at Once Upon a Crime, Haley and Lindsay at Curiosity Kills, Jamie and Amity at Bone Palace Palais Pod, Joe at True Crime Review, and like I said, many more. So thank you once again. Have a happy Thanksgiving.